years. But we were being booked by a company called International Artists, and International Artists didn't have any idea what distances were. When we got to the grand state of Texas, they would have us playing in San Antonio tonight, and tomorrow they would have us playing up in the Panhandle, not taking into account the fact that we were going to make those miles by bus. So eventually, the bus had just was so outrageous, the trips were so outrageous, that the ICC pulled the bus off the road, which left the company stranded, but not me. I'm the smart old showman. I've been stashing my money, so I'm able to pay my hotel bill. I am, as a matter of fact, we were in Chicago when it happened, I'm able to take a plane home. And sorry about that to the rest of the guys. There are no feelings of fidelity in that manner, that you would sponsor somebody else getting out of a crack.
When did you leave
the show business? During the time I was doing Detective Story, Sidney, to research his role, had gone around to the 23rd precinct, to the 28th precinct on 123rd Street in New York to talk to some of the detectives. And who was one of the detectives he talked to who was going to explain to Sidney what a man's response was when he got shot? But Fred Lucas. So after Fred had explained this to Sidney, Fred strolled back around to the theater to watch our rehearsal to see that Sidney was doing it right. Well, at that point, as I ran off the stage when they blacked out, I ran smack dab into Fred Lucas. I haven't gotten unstuck since.
He was the first black...
First grade detective.
In the New York City Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a native New Yorker.
No, he comes from Connecticut. He's a damn Yankee. He's from a place called Stamford, Connecticut, which was a very small town when he grew up. Actually, he had passed at the head of the civil service list to be a policeman in Connecticut, but Connecticut in those years wasn't having any either. So he had had to come down to New York City in order to get on the force as a patrolman. He tells me that Connecticut had posted notices in places as far away as Texas asking for policemen to come up to take the jobs that were available there, bypassing him at the head of the list. And when he went to the mayor of Stamford, Connecticut, the mayor said, "I don't believe it's happening." And Fred brought him the proof that it was happening, having a copy of this ad from the Texas papers. And the mayor looked at it and said, "I don't believe it's happening." So it was after that that Fred left town, went to New York for his residency, took the exam and went into Delahanty Institute and onto the police department.
What point did you make the actual decision to quit acting?
After I was married to Fred. I was on the road, and it was Thanksgiving. Now, I was making good money, too, but he was making a decent living. So now the rent doesn't come crashing about my head, you know, every month like it has all of my life. For once, I have a marriage partner, a man who's able to shoulder responsibility. So it was Thanksgiving, and I'm in Chicago again. And so I call home to find out how my husband and my dog, in that order, are doing. And they're so lonesome. Fred is talking about, well, he guesses he'll hang up now and go out and find some place to get a dinner. And he just fed Flash and walked him, so that poor bastard's all right. And when I hung up, I felt so ashamed. I thought, what I do is really foolish. What I should be doing is home taking care of my husband and my family. So as of that moment, he didn't ask me to leave. When I got back to New York, I just did not accept any more work in the theater. I became the housewife. Now, I stayed in the house all of 2 months. But I'm champing at the bit because I'm accustomed to going. I've got nothing to do. I've got a good savings account. He's got savings, so we take our money and pool it, and we buy a brownstone for extra income. We convert the brownstone into studio rooms. So we've really got some pretty good dough coming in.
Where? What part of the city is that?
On 141st Street between Convent and St. Nick in Harlem, opposite the park.
Okay.
So I take the last of my savings and I bought a franchise from the Rose Morgan Cosmetic Company. Rose Morgan was the Madam C.J. Walker of Harlem. And that she had the up-to-date salons that turned out the beautiful heads that did not look like they'd been fried. She was in business with a woman named Libby, who is now Sanford, Libby Sanford, no relationship. They had salons that took entire buildings where you could get from facial through the massage, through the pedicure, the shampoo, hairdo, the works. So she was now putting out a cosmetic line under her name. And she wanted to do this in the same manner that S.B. Fuller had done his. In other words, she wanted dealers working on a percentage. And she wanted her franchises to be bought and for the buyer to work on commission. In other words, you'd be buying your merchandise at a wholesale price. You'd be hustling your own dealers and trading them and paying them. Which I did, but it meant working around the clock. I thought I had found a good thing. I trained a secretary so she could hold down the fort while I was gone. Then in the morning I would hit the road and go down to the United States Employment Service, where there were literally hundreds of people milling about, you know, waiting to go in to sign up for their Social Security and so forth. And I would pass out my card, tell them, if you want to make extra money, come here. And so I got a train of people coming uptown seeking employment. So some of them would turn out to be people who wanted to work. So I would give them a suitcase with a standard set of cosmetics in it for them to begin with. Now, to make sure they weren't going to run away with my stuff, I put them in my car and drive them to where they lived, where they put down in their application they lived. If they pulled a key out of the pocket and put it in the door, I could pretty well guess that that was where they lived. Now, every morning at 9 o'clock, I had a sales meeting. Now, if somebody doesn't show up for 2 days in a row to a sales meeting, I figure they got my stuff and gone. So then I hit the road to be a detective to find them, and I could find them in New York City. And I weighed possibly 120 pounds, but I could make so much racket you'd think I was going to kick a door down. So I did that for over a year, and I was so exhausted at that point that my husband said, enough is enough, and what you're doing is you're killing yourself instead of making money. I was making money, but the toll on my health was just too much. So he and I took a trip down to the West Indies, and when I came back, then I went to work as a paid employee at a beauty supply house, Sunny Beauty Supply. And I did that all of maybe a month or 2 months. Quit it. Then I decided, well, if I'm going to sell, I want to sell big. What I really wanted to do was to become an automobile salesman, like for a Cadillac company. Why not? You could sell to all the pimps, if nothing else. And I had something worked out there for all the pimps that couldn't get credit. I was going to finance the deal myself.
Do you have any regrets that you left your career when it was...
I'm not sure I have left. I'm sure that if the phone rang right now, and say it was Sydney, and he was in town. He said, Sybil, I'm just now finding out where you live. Listen, I'm going to do a picture, and Harry and I, they are best friends, are Belafonte.
Oh.
And we are the producers. But I got a role for you. And I'd say, be there in 10 minutes. Where are you? Fred would just have to understand that the fire bell rang.
Yeah, I would think it would be difficult turning back on. Even though it's hard work and very little security in it, but it's
such a... Well, place. I had it good, you see. I know many, many people who have tried it. It hasn't come out like that for them. I speak disparagingly of the baggy pants comic. I made a whole bushel basket full of money with the baggy pants comic.
Who do you consider,
Pigmeat is Here Come the Judge.
Yes, who do you consider he and Mom Mabley were still popular when I was in high school? I mean, we all know them, their party records, they were called. Who do you consider the best people in your profession, black or white?
As of this moment?
Then and now. Who did you model yourself on, or who did you...
I'm crazy about a youngster named Louis Gossett.
Oh,
I'm mad for him. Yes, but he's done many things in between.
Yeah,
he's got a very distinctive style. And I remember him from the beginning, when he did Take a Giant Step on Broadway. He was a 15-year-old kid at the time. But he had something special about him.
Anyone else that stands out in your mind?
There is a very beautiful young girl that I'd like to see things happen to. Two of them. One is called Denise Nicholson.
She was just in town over the weekend.
She was? Is she as beautiful as she appears?
I was supposed to call her and I didn't. I know that sounds so shameful.
Yes.
She came doing research for the, apparently Quincy Jones wants to do a movie about Mammy Pleasant.
Ha ha ha! Oh, what could be a more beautiful marriage?
So, anyway. I've done research on her, and I was supposed to call her, and I didn't. So
then there's another one named Debbie Allen that I think has got a lot going. She's very quick, very smart.
But you said in the other session that Betty Davis was one of your childhood heroines. Was she in any way a...
I never met the lady. Mm-hmm. Whenever she would do a Broadway show, I would be there faithfully. That's as close as I've come to her from the audience.
Because of the kind of image she projected of the independent tough.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And successful.
I don't know to what extent you want to talk about the interim marriages between Lawrence Lewis and...
Timmy Rogers.
Yes.
I had been divorced from Lawrence a year, I guess, when I married Timmy in Los Angeles. Timmy, to me, was a great star. Nat King Cole was still the King Cole Trio at that time. And they had been out of California on their first tour. And Timmy had gone along with them. He had been a member of a dance team called Timmy and Freddie, which was an outstanding team in its time, in the same category as the, who are those brothers that could kick so high? The Berry Brothers, who played with the, you know, the units that used to be made up with Count Basie, the Berry Brothers, a comic, and a singer. Anyway, Timmy had been out with Nat on this first tour out of California. There was a man named Carlos Gastel, who possibly still handles Nat's estate, who was managing Nat Cole and could see that there was possibilities. So when Timmy came back to Los Angeles, he started coming to the Lincoln Theater where I was working, because that was the only gig in town. And all the musicians from the East who'd get stuck on the coast would join the band at that theater. The chorus girls, there was a chorus line, from other shows would come and join the line there. It was the place to be. So Timmy was around, as many other actors were around, and we started going to eat together, and then we became friends, and then he started talking that show business talk to me because he knew it from the top down. And so I thought he was fascinating. I guess, truthfully, I also thought this is the short distance to the top. So somewhere along the line, we decided we were going to go to Elsinore for a vacation. And I reminded him that I could not afford to go to Elsinore as an unmarried woman. And that was unusual to him because he was accustomed to broad just going on and on. So we got married in Los Angeles. We went to Elsinore. This is the honeymoon. So we were there a week. We come back and I go back to work. Meanwhile, Carlos Gastel is preparing for another unit to leave California with Nat. With the King Cole Trio. Now, Timmy had done the first year on some special material that had been written for him by a man named Sid Cullen, who is with the motion picture industry. Sid was now in the Army and not available to write an act for Timmy. Timmy was not able to hold down a spot as a single by himself. So we go out to Hollywood Boulevard and get some of the gag writers and buy up a lot of material. And we sit down on the floor and we put an act together that requires two people. I'm the second person. So now I'm going to travel with a big-time unit and get out of California professionally. So that was how I came to be on the road with the King Cole Trio unit when a record called Straighten Up and Fly Right hit. We were in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Snow up to our hunkers. But anywhere you went, those fish joints in the colored section would all have a loudspeaker with a monkey toe or something to straighten up and fly right. And that was all anybody said. Lay it on me, Jack. Will you straighten up and fly right? And when we got to the theater we were going to play, there was a line wound around the block to the box office. Well, none of us had ever seen or heard of anything like this, and Nat's excited. And at best, you know, Nat had a speech impediment, which does not show when he sings. He smooths it out. Well, early on in the tour, Carlos Gastel had arranged it so that I would introduce the acts because of Nat's speech impediment, which was the job I was later to hold at the Apollo. So Nat is becoming a star, and Nat doesn't know which way to turn next. He's so excited. But his little wife, Nadine, is, I recognize her. She's like my father. She's punching the keys on the cash register. That's another brick in my house. And like that. So finally, we toured directly across the United States. The line is wound around the block too deep. So we're appearing with a monumental star who's hit the horizon like a comet. We leave the Apollo Theater. Pardon me, nothing we can do is wrong because anything that touches turns to gold. He's recording in between, and in recording everything he records sells like there's no tomorrow. Also, he's attracting millionaires to his dressing room. There was a woman in New York, a woman named Ruth Pohl, who had a playhouse on 68th Street, down in the Silk Stocking District, just off of Fifth Avenue. The playhouse was a living room the size of my entire house. And she was giving promotional parties for Nat because she wanted him to record for her company. The promotional parties invited every big actor in New York City, every disc jockey, and all of the other mogules from the other companies. I've seen her since then do the same thing for other artists that she wanted. And she would have Rubens, the caterer, or Lindy's to come in and cater her party, which might be for 300-400 people. So I'm just giddy all this stuff is happening. So from the Apollo Theater, we finish that engagement. We go immediately to Newark and we play the Adams Theater. Well, it's the same old thing all over again, except that in the Adams, there's nothing to do in Newark. So between shows, I would go down and sit in Oscar Moore, who was the guitarist at the time, in his dressing room, because he was a very accomplished guitarist, and listen to him fool around with transitions and chords on his instrument. And there was a raggedy, ashy-looking little black gal who used to come in the afternoon, and she was just so dirty and ugly, but she would sit down and she'd sing the chords behind him. Turned out her name was Sarah Vaughan. But who paid attention to her? She could hit the notes, but she looked so bad. So from there, we go on down the line to Howard, and then that's as far south as Nat would go at that time. Then we go come back across the country. So instead of coming back across the country, Timmy and I stay in New York because he says, New York is his home, and this is where we're going to be. And this is where I'm going to find work and do something with my career. He knew what he was doing. He was pushing career in front of me. And, of course, that was the bait for me. So it was he who sent me, because he actually literally sent me to talk to Frank Shiffman and to go into the Apollo as a straight woman for the comics that were playing there.
What effect did the fact that there was a war going on have on your life or any particular events?
Well, when Franklin D. Roosevelt died, Timmy Rogers had just come in off the road with Nat's first tour with this special material. And he and I were riding, we had been out to Ciro's where Nat was appearing, where Nat was rehearsing during the day, and we'd been out there, you know, having a drink and just fooling around. We were on Sunset Boulevard coming back into town. Came over the radio that Franklin Delano Roosevelt had died in Florida. And the nation was in mourning. And Timmy, I have the actor's ear for a line, Timmy said, "Well, I guess I'll have to take that line about the president out of my act." And that was as much as it meant to him. So VJ Day came not long after that. On VJ Day, Timmy had a rehearsal, and people were dancing in the streets and throwing bouquets up to the sky. And I wanted to be part of that celebration. But he wanted an audience, so I had to go and listen to him while he went through his rehearsal. So that's how much it meant. The war to most male performers meant using one of the established tricks for staying out of the service, like the eating of the soap, which would make them violently ill and would give them an updated heartbeat and would give them the 4F that they desired.
I was going to ask you how these people avoided being drafted.
That's one of the tricks that I knew about. I'm sure there were others.
We've been told that our predecessors were so much more patriotic than we were.
Well, this was just a hipper joint generation. The predecessors hadn't gotten a darn thing for being cannon fodder.
What about Timmy Rogers? That is about a 2-year marriage, too, isn't it?
Yes.
So
I kept making the same mistakes over and over.
Well,
now, Timmy was a man that I'm doing the work. He wasn't working. He wanted to do a single, but he wasn't strong enough to do a single. So I'm working the Apollo, and he's not working. So pretty soon, the rehearsals start stretching far into the night, until after a while, it's not a marriage at all.
How does Edward Smith come into the picture?
I met Edward Smith. I was divorced from Timmy. I'd been an unmarried woman for possibly 3 years by then.
And was there a stigma to divorce? Well, I know there was sort of one in terms of Adlai Stevenson's campaign, that kind of thing, but for
no,
an actress?
None at all. Actress, you said. Don't say that. None at all. The best was that some other actor might ask you what financial gain you got from the marriage. How much did you get?
What about from your father's point of view or your friends?
My father just thought I was wacky and left it at that. And my friends, I suppose, were so busy with their own lives that they took small note of who I was marrying and divorcing. After the first marriage, who had been someone they knew. After that, these were unknowns to them, and they could have cared less.
But it was still somewhat unusual, even in the 40s, to be on a third marriage within 6 years.
Possibly, but it never came up.
So anyway, I was interrupting.
During this period, I had gone for a period of maybe 3 years, living alone. It was just before I bought my dog. While I was making good money, I wasn't going out with anybody at all because I was afraid that men were after your money. I didn't have the usual fears a girl has. I was busy protecting my bank book because I had learned from my father to hang on to the money. Plus, when I divorced Timmy, I cleaned him out. So I had a good deal of money in the bank. And I wasn't dating anyone. Then I began dating a white boy. I'm afraid of my own. And that was an association that he was great fun. He lived very well. He would take me to dinner out of town. And he would treat me, I'm sure, as he would have treated any other girl. He was very polite. He sent me lovely gifts. But he wouldn't take me downtown in New York City to dinner. So So it began to wear thin because it was pretty obvious that he was ashamed of me.
Was he an actor?
No, he was not. He was a businessman.
Your father had warned you.
Yes, he had. But it had gotten down to the nitty-gritty, and I just could not talk to the four walls anymore. And you know how life is. You stay alone so long, and you're in the public eye, and pretty soon the butchers start hitting on you because they figure that must be what it is, why you're not with somebody. So I'm trying to stay away from that scene, too. So I met Eddie Spiegel through a white woman friend of mine who had an interracial marriage. She and her husband had a business up in Portchester, New York. They had a bar and grill and a hotel over it. So she introduced me to Eddie Spiegel. And
Spiegel?
Spiegel, he was an Irishman.
Is he the one who destined to be your third husband?
No.
Oh, I thought I was getting the names confused. Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, Edward Smith was my third husband.
Right, okay.
So he's about the only dating I'm doing. Actually, my life was just very barren. I'm putting all my energy and drive into what I'm accomplishing on the stage. And there are no productions happening that have roles that are acceptable for an actor of the stature that I have now achieved. And I went to Atlantic City with a girlfriend of mine. She was down at the shore, as she was every year, with her two children. And she invited me to come down for a weekend, and I went down. And she was unmarried, and so what we were doing was on Liberty Street, hitting the bars. You know how everybody comes to see who's there from Philly and who's there from Washington. And she, being a regular, knew everybody. So she introduced me to Edward Smith, and that's how that started. He was there from Richmond, and he had a brand new, beautiful Cadillac. I didn't have a car at the time. And when I went back to New York after the weekend, he showed up during the week. Me and called me up and wanted to know if he could take me to dinner. I said, yes, he could. So we went for dinner, and he wanted to know something about New York, and he wanted to get into the business. How did you go about it? So I laid it out for him about getting rehearsal studios at the NOLA studios, about studying voice with Dick Haymes's mother, or else studying elocution because he had a southern accent. Or maybe I meant it the way I said it. With Stella Adler in the Carnegie Building, and I'm giving him all the top drawer stuff, and he's apparently got the money to carry through with it. So we dated for a year, and I always thought, oh, this man respects me. How nice it is to be with a man of my own class, because he was a guy who never pushed himself on me. And he always showed up for a date looking so nice, beautiful clothes, well turned out, and he would be out of the car at the door on time. So it got so we were dating, we'd see each other every day. We'd go someplace in the evening. So we married. And then I found out that he didn't really want to be married to a woman at all. So that's what ended that marriage.
Do you have any general comments on the institution of marriage?
I will probably always be married to somebody. I believe in being married. Being alone is a very loathsome state of events.
What about what people now call shacking up?
No. I don't think that's fair to either partner. I think if you care enough, get married. It's that simple.
Well, I guess some people now don't want all the legal hassles in case it doesn't work out.
Well, I don't know if there are that many legal hassles. It would occur to me that if either partner wanted to make a problem out of it, they could do so just from the fact that they were shacked up, because in many areas of the country, the fact that you are shacked up gives you a legal status.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the new law. Did you want to have children at any point?
No. My mother warned me about that thing a long time ago. My mother told me from the time that I was yay high, and don't have no babies. There are enough of them here in the world now. Don't bring no little black spasms to me and ask me to be their grandmama. Because that's out. I don't want to see no alligator bait.
Why did she say that? Did she,
My mother's a woman who just does not like children.
Well, did you feel some social pressure to have children?
Well, at one point during my marriage to Lawrence, I was with child, and I was considering having the child. My mother was keeping a calendar on me like I was a young girl at home. And she checked with me every month, well, is it there? You late. Well, what you gonna do about it? You better go and do something about it. You beginning to show. So nothing must do but that I must get rid of this baby, and I was still listening to Mama instead of being a married woman. As it turns out, it's probably for the best, because marriage was not to last, and I was going to have this swinging door arrangement for so many years to come. This is the only stable marriage I've ever had.
I don't know if you want to discuss it, but how do people go about getting rid of babies? Was it a private matter, or did you have to go to one of the doctors?
It was a very private matter. There were only certain, number one, you would have to go to Caucasians of a certain class to find out where they went, because you knew that they went to safe, nice places. And it was very, very, very expensive, because the operation was performed, and usually you were kept overnight to make sure that there were no complications.
Were these doctors who were licensed? We just did this sort of moonlighting.
Moonlighting, mm-hmm. And they all had excellent equipment. You know, you'd be put to sleep, but not know really anything about it until it was all over.
Well,